From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 12th day of June 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. The folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will help us discuss what's happening in the cash grain trade around our area. And then a bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast, ever important this week. We'll do that with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. And along the way, we'll check in on the agricultural news, too, on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the Farming World. Look us up online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, it's Monday afternoon, the 12th day of June. We're now joined here on Illinois Public Media's willag.org Closing Market Report by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Another hot one, and the market said, oh, there's rain. Let's go down, I guess.
Yeah, we went from 1/100th of an inch of rain to 600. Six times the amount of chance. But this midweek event's mainly northern Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan as the front kind of rides the ridge in through here midweek. We've got some chance of pop-up showers. You get the atmosphere juiced up like this. You know, it keeps the weather guys quite active, and just about anything can happen. But as we move through the week and get in the late week activity, the models went a little wetter, half to maybe 1.25. Kind of seeing Nebraska and some of the Western Belt get shortchanged or missed out, but it's Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. But these forecasts change every 6 hours. And with the recent run-up we saw, we had some liquidation, some renewed selling from the commodity funds. They showed up back on the sell side going into midday of over 15,000 contracts of corn. I'm sure that number's a little higher than that here. We've got this afternoon's crop conditions report. Some of the trade believe we could see the 3-4% drop in the good to excellent category for corn and spring wheat both. I don't know if we'll see that big of a drop in the corn. Actually, corn needed some heat, and you know, we'll have to look at the state breakdown to see exactly who did what where for the most part. But you know, if we miss these rains here as we go through the week, then definitely we're going to start to see some pretty good deterioration in some areas as we move forward in through here. Spring wheat or the wheat in general will probably be watched more closely as that crop is a little bit more in a critical stage. But we're in a weather market. Some of the bulls believe we probably could take 5% of the crop off the yield. There's some estimates down in this 162 area versus 170 from last week in through here. And if you keep demand the same, consistent, you know, it could take carry out quickly down to just about 1.1 billion bushels. Then if you really want to get bullish, you take 10% of the crop off. You can take carry out clear down to 400 million bushels. But carryout won't be that low, because what will happen is if we start to run into some severe weather problem, we'll have to go higher and kind of ration the supply we have. So we'll see what happens. But also, too, Todd, if you go back a year ago, this is the week we kind of topped out. We had corn futures trading in over the 390 area. We ran up to about almost 4.5 in just a matter of 2 to 3 weeks. And the fear is if that would happen again, corn dropped $1.40 in just a short period of time, and there was really no opportunity to see a dead cat bounce to get some sales off. So that was kind of fear setting in here as we went through the day here, kind of watching the market just fail to kind of catch here as we went through the trading session.
And what I think may be the positive note of the day in the face of a dime lost in both the corn and the wheat, soybeans managed to also only lose a dime, and That seems like a fairly decent sign for the support under that marketplace.
Yeah, there's some optimism. If you look in proportion to that, they held in there. Beans still have a long ways to go. Bean demand continues to be fairly good. You know, we'll see if the beans get some moisture and get some of these beans and dry dirt to germinate. But, yeah, beans kind of gave a little bit of encouragement. They could have been worse when you look at the atmosphere we were trading in today.
Well, on that note, I'm wondering whether you think new crop sales of soybeans, and while they held strong today, most people have been saying, hey, wait a second, there's a wall of soybeans coming from both South America, which has already been harvested, and potentially from North America. Can we really hold at these levels? We started at the $10 range earlier in the year. Now we're in that $9.30 range or thereabouts. Should producers think again about adding to their positions?
Well, I would think so. On some strength at these price levels, I'd be kind of patient because most producers have been really aggressive on bean sales. Old crop pretty well cleaned up and really aggressive on new crop. We're in this atmosphere where, too, probably what would be more warranted with the wide basis and the uncertainty of crop production would be to establish a price floor. That way, if we do receive some moisture here over the near term, you've got that downside protection. But if we miss out on the rains and, you know, don't see the crop germinate in some of this replant area and see some adverse weather later on the growing season, you still have the open upside until you figure out how many bushels you want to market. Now, corn's been a different story. You know, we've gone with the theory of courage calls. We're quite aggressive with that and kind of try to stick to the plan here. When we see the ups and the futures above $4, you can lay into the cash market or hedge and have a sort of a covered position to give you that comfort to market and not worry about selling too soon or having the bushels tied.
And finally, turn your attention to livestock. Normally, when the marketplace on the grains and oil seeds are lower, the livestock has a better day. That was not the case for this Monday. Why?
Failure to see some higher cash trade right out of the chute in through here. But yes, you're correct. Lower grain prices, higher values. It's kind of like the theory of trying to trade the dollar in grain prices. But we just saw some good old-fashioned selling come in place. There's a lot of technical sell stops just under last week's lows. When you look at the price charts there, we did leave some fairly good gaps in the June contract, and I think it wants to go back and down, sort of fulfill that. But the market's really juiced in through here, and we're just good for a few days of backing and filling.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Very good. Take care, Todd.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, it's the final day for the public to comment on two issues that promise to have a significant impact on U.S. agriculture. What the Trump administration's negotiating objective should be in the upcoming NAFTA 2.0 talks, and the interim final rule from USDA's Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Administration that would lower the burden of proof for livestock farmers who sue meat packing companies they contract with by clarifying that they need only prove harm to themselves and not to the wider industry. That's the standard now in place. As of Sunday evening, 472 comments had rolled in on NAFTA and more than 1,000 on the GPSA rule. Let's stay in Washington, where tomorrow Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue will defend the White House budget proposal for fiscal 2018 before the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee that oversees USDA and FDA funding, nearly 3 weeks after he appeared before its House counterpart During that hearing, Perdue used the farm bill as cover from tough questions on the administration's proposal to slash federal spending for SNAP and crop insurance and eliminate two international food aid programs, reminding lawmakers that Congress will ultimately decide the fate of those policies in the 2018 farm bill. Senators will likely question Perdue's plan to create an assistant to the Secretary for Rural Development position and eliminate the undersecretary post for that mission, which is part of a broader reorganization of the department that also includes establishment of an undersecretary for trade. Senator Jeff Merkley, a Democrat of Oregon, who's the ranking member of the Senate Appropriations Agriculture Committee, sent a letter to Perdue Friday requesting that the undersecretary for rural development post be maintained. Senate Agriculture Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow also signed on to the letter. Well, let's move out of Washington, D.C. and look around the rest of the globe. The European Union is seeking to expand its trade relationship with Mexico. Under the current trade agreement between the EU and Mexico, the EU's most active trading sectors with Mexico are machinery and car parts. The current agreement was implemented in 2000. U.S. President Trump's threat to impose punitive tariffs on imports from Mexico are piling the pressure to quickly diversify trade in Mexico, and the New Deal could be a response. The Chancellor of Germany traveled to Mexico to push trade last week. An upgraded trade agreement could feature food and agricultural products, things like bananas, avocados, and tuna. And let's stay south of the border now, but head to South America, where a state-controlled bank in Brazil has cut credit lines to meat processor JBS South America, following the plea bargain deal in which the company's majority owner admitted paying bribes to Brazilian politicians. Meat industry publication Meeting Place reports the bank decided to review the conditions of JBS's credit limit and of a loan expiring in 2018. Reuters previously reported that the Brazilian government had ordered the bank not to refinance existing credit lines to JNF, the company controlling JBS. However, other state-controlled banks in Brazil are not planning to do the same. The move stems from a majority shareholder revealing in a plea bargain in April an apparent consent to bribe politicians. JBS signed a leniency deal to pay the equivalent of $3.15 billion with a B dollars in fines to settle the charges over corruption. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the Farming World. Now up next, something, well, almost completely different. It comes from Rod Bain. He's at USDA's Washington office. They've been looking at barley, especially for the craft beer sector in the eastern part of the United States.
Barley malt is a main ingredient in beer, with different varieties grown by region and by season. However, for the growing eastern craft beer industry, the need to have distinctive and local barley varieties has led researchers such as USDA's Dave Marshall and colleagues at land-grant universities to conduct genetic study on malting barleys.
Our main trait that we're looking for in malting barley is having those malt characteristics, again, the correct enzymes in the correct concentrations in order to make malt once the barley is germinated. But in addition to that, it has to be acceptable, if not outstanding, as far as farmers are concerned.
With genetic traits such as improved yield and disease resistance, Marshall says the goal of the research is developing a gene pool that could be used nationwide for particular barley varieties, with additional study on terroir, the flavor profile derived from soils, climate, genetics, and other factors that gives barley and beer a distinct, almost regional taste. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
On a personal note here, I'll get an up-close look at barley malting at a field day at the Fargo, North Dakota, Moorhead, Minnesota, Anheuser-Busch malting plant on the 20th day of July. It'll be vacation time, relatively speaking, for me, but I'll be reporting back on that. My daughter, Megan, is working for Anheuser-Busch as an agronomy intern this summer, and I'll be up there to visit her. And of course, we'll take a look at the crops between here and there, and we'll tell you more about that sometime in mid-July. Now, let's take some time to explore a bit more of what's in the Trump budget and how the agriculture committees in Washington, D.C. are dealing with them. The House Ag Committee and its leaders are arguing against the White House proposal to eliminate two key international food aid programs, Food for Peace and the McGovern-Dole International Food for Education Initiative. Since the end of World War II, the U.S. has donated more than $80 billion in food aid. That generosity, of course, has boosted America's standing in the world, and it's also provided some income for jobs here at home. It's one of the many reasons the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Michael Conaway, says those two U.S. food aid programs are generating bipartisan support.
Eliminating such programs seems a bit contrary to the role of any robust America First policy. While less drastic than proposed elimination of these programs, I also fear that continued efforts to chip away at the core of food aid programs and to increasingly turn them into cash-based assistance program will ultimately erode the alliance of domestic agriculture and maritime supporters that have long advocated for these programs.
Well, the Obama administration unsuccessfully proposed some cash-based food assistance, but Conaway argues today's budget constraints are real, and program savings are needed, including by helping struggling nations to improve their own farming systems. Top House Ag Democrat and chairman during the last Farm Bill, Colin Peterson, points to the link between food aid and trade.
As trade deals continue to dominate the discussion, it is worth pointing out that 11 of our top 15 trading partners in 2017 were once recipients of U.S. assistance. Unfortunately, the budget put forward by the administration would completely eliminate two key U.S. assistance programs, the Food for Peace program and the McGovern-Dole program.
Witnesses from food aid and advocacy groups defended the life-saving success of the programs and urged full or increased funding. Ag lawmakers from both parties continue to oppose the White House budget cuts to farm programs, including crop insurance, research, and rural development, while there are more party differences on food stamp cuts. This is the closing market report for Monday afternoon. Let's check now what's happened in the agricultural cash grain market. We're joined by Greg Johnson of the Andersons. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
All right. So what happened today?
Well, they put rain in the forecast, a slight chance midweek, but a better chance Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Take your pick as far as which weather forecaster you want to believe. Some say a half inch, some say up to 2 inches in the eastern corn belt, 1 inch in the western corn belt. And if we really did get those heavier amounts, I guess you can understand why the market was down today. We bought a lot of old crop corn last week on the rally. Farmers are still sitting on a bunch of old crop corn that they are moving. And we were getting close to those levels where farmers might want to start actually selling new crop corn. But with the rain in the forecast, the old crop corn continued to pressure the market, and the funds just backed away from covering any more of their short positions in the new crop. And so here we are 10 cents lower today.
Until that materializes, it hasn't changed the conditions you talked about on Commodity Week.
Correct. The thin stands on 40% of the corn in Illinois, for example, are still there. The first 40% that got planted is in good shape, and the last 20% that either got planted or replanted is a month late, but has the potential to be okay. So, we're still waiting to see what the weather will do over the next 2 months. I guess the only thing I would say is rain does make grain, but a half an inch of rain, if we're on the lower end of the amounts, a half inch of rain after 2 weeks with no rain and the hot weather won't go very far. And the other thing is, keep in mind, the average rainfall for Illinois in June and July is 4 inches a month, about an inch a week. So even if we get a couple inches of rain in June and a couple inches of rain in July, that's still only half of the normal rain. So we will, a drought condition doesn't mean it never rains. I mean, we'll get rain. It's just not going to get the normal amount of rain. So we could get 2 to 3 inches of rain and still be in what some people would call below average conditions, and that would affect the yield. But it's just too early to say that for sure at this point. We just came away from a time frame when we had too much rain.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. Well, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast now. Mark Russo is with us from Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Mark, it's all up to you. Farmers want to know, and so does everybody else, what's the weather forecast look like across the Corn Belt?
Well, Todd, the pressure is on here. And the way that we're assessing and discussing the overall situation here is that we are going to be in a warmer bias across the Corn Belt over the next couple of weeks. Now, the next 3 to 4 days are still the hottest here with this EML or elevated mix layer that developed over the western U.S. That's this heat bubble that we're seeing right now, developed out west and shifted over the central U.S. here in recent days. And that's what we're experiencing right now. We're going to continue to experiencing that for another few days before then moves off and we see a cool down in temperatures back down to more normal levels here for several days. But then that's going to lead by the end of next week or into the following week there of June and yet another one of these EMLs. So that's going to produce a warmer than normal temperature bias. In between these heat bubbles, there will be opportunities for rain. And the main, at least from now to the end of the week here, we feel that overall, the main rains will encompass a majority of the Corn Belt. We're specifically forecasting approximately 75% of the Corn Belt to receive significant amounts over 4/10 or 5/10 of an inch. And so with this warmer bias, so we are seeing opportunities for rain, and that should help to improve soil moisture, help basically kind of stabilize things following, there's been pretty dry conditions here, specifically in the Corn Belt. Now, this dryness has extended into the northern plains. That's actually where conditions are obviously much worse for small grains and spring wheat. And that is one area where rainfall prospects do not look very good. But as you go further east, i.e. getting here into the Corn Belt, we do see good opportunities for rainfall coming up.
Will anybody get much more than half an inch? That's enough or a little, but we haven't had rain for a couple of weeks across a large part of the Corn Belt.
Yes, we do see totals in excess of an inch or even inch and a half across portions of Iowa, Illinois, Indiana. From a coverage standpoint, that's obviously less than the 75%, probably closer to about half the belt or so, picking up amounts over 1 inch. But there will be some localized higher amounts as well because we're dealing with thunderstorm activity, thunderstorm complexes that can produce some of the heavy rainfall, especially with some of the higher moisture content that we're seeing right now in the atmosphere.
Thanks, Mark. That's Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.